Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We are so pleased you could join us tonight. We have an interesting program lined up. I'll introduce the star guest in just a moment, but first, we want to remind you, too, that if you'd like to call in and be on our program tonight, we always encourage you to do so, and the number is
1-800-966-1039, and you have to dial a whole number, Paul, even if you're local, you know.
Now, what if you're listening to us in Chicago? Can you call?
Absolutely.
Toll-free?
Absolutely.
Wow, what a
deal.
Yes,
sir.
All right,
and if you're in Augusta or Rockland or listening to us down on those stations.
Anywhere in Maine.
Anywhere in Maine. If you're picking us up, we're actually in Canada or New Hampshire, whatever.
Yeah, all righty. So, anyway, we're going to introduce our guest, but first the crew who make the show possible week after week, the engineer behind the controls, the man with his hand on the toggle switches and the gauges who knows what he's doing most of the time.
We hope.
He is the sage of Grand Lake Stream, none other than Mr. Norman F. Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the show. And this ought to be a good one.
I think it is. Yes. Yeah. And with him to his right, is he still there? I can't see him.
I'm still here.
Oh, with him to his right is the Raspberry Baron of Orrington, Mr. Scotty Bates. Take a bow, Scotty.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and good evening, everybody out there. Yes, I stay in the corner here where nobody can sneak up behind me.
There you go. It's always good in the restaurant. I always sit in the corner.
Right.
Okay, never put your back to the door, right. And also we wanted to recognize our esteemed engineer emeritus who can't be with us tonight. He's been working hard all day, and he's taking the night off. Jim Layton is listening to us at home, and we're pleased that he could be with us via the airwaves. And also, my co-host is with us tonight, and he is wearing a stellar shirt. I tried to buy it from him before the show, but he wanted too much, so I didn't buy it. Anyway, he's a registered Maine guide. He's a former game warden, and he's written some great books on fishing, my friend Robert Lehman.
Thank you, Paul. It's going to be a good show. I'd stay tuned to this one, folks. This is going to be a beauty.
I love that shirt.
Well, I know you do. We've been admiring it all the evening.
Got to talk to Alice.
I dug this out of mothballs.
I think if I talk to Alice, I could get that shirt for free.
Why would you want it? I mean, what is it?
I like the color. I love that color.
Color?
And I like you got the Maine IF&W logo on it with a beautiful trout.
That's why I bought it.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I'm not usually jealous of your shirts, but I am tonight.
You like that one, huh?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Well, maybe we can work something out later.
Yeah, it's too bad we didn't have TV. Folks at home could see that shirt. Sure.
Yeah, we could zoom right in on that patch. Yeah.
We could do that. Our guest tonight is a fellow that I've known for many, many years. He's always a pleasure to have him on. He's always informative and entertaining. And he is his title is Bird Group Leader for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And he's been with the department more than 40 years. I guess 40 years this year.
40 years.
And I would like to welcome Brad Allen.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's nice to see you and Bob.
Nice to have you here, sir.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about all those upland game birds that you're interested in, and also we're going to talk about songbirds, and I think you'll find it interesting. And if you'd like to join us tonight, any questions, Brad would be glad to answer at 1-800-966-1039.
Somebody we had on the show, I think, last couple of weeks, they said there's a lot of birds in Aroostook County.
Nice.
I mean, a lot of big, what does they talk about? Big broods. A lot of broods.
We're going to get to that.
With all that rain, you wouldn't think so, but yeah.
We're going to get to that.
That'd be great.
So we're going to get to that.
Stay tuned and we'll find out.
Right. First, though, before we get to that, Outdoor Digest time brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. A couple of reminders. Oh, by the way, the October issue of the Sporting Journal is not yet on the street, but it will be within about 2 weeks, but we also have the September issue, which has a moose, a snow-covered moose on the cover, And if you'd like to pick up a copy of the Sporting Journal, some great articles in there getting ready for the fall hunt. And we encourage you to pick up a copy at a newsstand near you. Or if you'd like to sign up for a mail subscription and save yourself a few dollars, you can do that by calling Alicia during the week at 1-800. No, that's our station number. What is Alicia's number, Bob?
I don't know.
It's 732-4880.
That's right. Exactly.
Thank you.
Good memory.
All right. Let's see. A couple of items here on the Outdoor Digest agenda. Old Town Trading Post, as we've been reminding you for a couple of weeks now, is having a big hoedown this coming Saturday, September 14th. Right, Norm?
Yes, this Saturday.
Are you going to be there?
I plan on it. I'm going to be heading north, so I'll...
I hope you stop by.
I plan on stopping in.
You get a burger and a hot dog.
Yeah.
No charge. So anyway, that is at the Old Town Trading Post. Most of you who shop for outdoor stuff know where it is, but if you don't, it's on the Bennick Road up there in Old Town, and they're right off 95, just a short ways off 95. Take the ramp, come in there, and take your first left, and they're right there on the right. They're going to have an open house. It's a customer appreciation day, as they call it.
Yeah, fantastic. What a great day that's going to be.
And
up
they're
there.
Going to have some nice seminars. In fact, Lee Cantor, the moose biologist, who's a co-worker of Brad's, is going to be there and talk about processing your moose.
Yeah, wow, that's good.
We've got a fellow, Rod McCusick's going to do a fly tying demo.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are going to be there to shake hands and
sign books.
Sell a couple of books, maybe.
Maybe.
Yep.
We'll see.
And
special
buys and bargains, and they're going to have some giveaways. And again, hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill, no charge. So join us up there this coming Saturday, anytime during the day. I think they open around 8.
I wouldn't be surprised if you get there, 9 o'clock? Probably have some coffee.
Oh, there will be coffee.
Wow, that'd be great, huh?
Coffee on, that's for sure.
Yep.
Okay, a couple of other things. Just want to remind you, the expanded archery season is now open, which began, I think, yesterday.
Yesterday.
Right?
Yes.
Or tomorrow.
Tomorrow. No.
Starts tomorrow, yeah. September 8th is tomorrow, right?
No, this is the 8th, isn't it?
No, it started yesterday because I know a guy
Saturday.
It was Youth Day.
It was Youth Day.
Yeah.
There you go.
But for Ulsters, it starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, and I want to remind you again, you have to have an archery license to join an expanded hunt, and there are specific limited areas where you can hunt deer during the expanded season. They're usually in the urban areas of the state. Check your law book. Make sure you're in the right place so you don't get in any trouble. And you can hunt with a bow right up until December 7th, actually. The expanded season lasts till then. You can, as I understand it from my recollection when I used to do that, you can take a deer of either sex without a permit. But if you want extra deer, you have to get special permits for either a buck or a doe. Do I have that right, Brad?
I'm not 100% sure.
I think that's right.
I don't keep track of that accurately.
But you can get two deer, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty good.
You can actually get more.
Well, you can, without a permit, you can only get one.
Right.
It can be the male or female.
I see.
Once you do that, though, you can continue to hunt in the expanded zone if you buy a special permit to get an extra deer.
I see.
Okay, so that's good news for all of you archers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time for to bring in the band. Get the band lined up there, Maestro. Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah. Okay, Bobby's got his dancing shoes on. He's going to tell you what's going on in the fishing world, right, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely.
All righty.
Yes, all righty then. You know, you could have...
What color is that?
That's kind of a, I don't know, a warden gray.
Kind
green,
of a warden gray, yeah. I love that shirt. Don't you, Norm?
It's really nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay. So what's going on?
I think Brad Allen liked that shirt too, didn't you? Yeah, he did.
It's a beautiful shirt.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. I dug that out of mothballs, you know.
I wonder if they sell those.
Especially tonight.
Do they sell those now? Do you know, Brad?
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
See, you could probably buy one. All you got to do is go up to the Orono show.
I'm going to have to buy
in March, in spring. You have that, don't they?
Oh, I got to have it before that.
I'll check out
the website.
You can.
So what's going on, Fishing World?
Well, we have a report here from our buddy up in Greenville, Tim Opry.
Yep.
And he said they're going to be running quite a bit of water in Roach and East Outlet and West Branch and Wilson Stream shortly. And that's scheduled to go up pretty soon. I think it would after all the rain we've had this last month, a lot of rain.
Well,
I think it almost a record in August, the rain we've had.
Is it?
That's amazing because the last 2 months, the last month, in August. The last 2 years have been a drought conditions, and this year it was, we got poured on. I mean, we really got a lot of water. Yep. So anyway, they're going to be raising the water up there, and I don't know the wet temperature. I didn't mention that there, but it's got to be down the cold nights we've had.
I would think so,
I mean, it's
yeah.
like 45 last night.
Yeah.
When I was walking the dog this morning, it was 7 o'clock, it was 45 degrees, and scheduled to be down there again tomorrow morning. So, boy, well, the water temperature.
Norm was dipping his thermometer at Grand Lake Stream.
Yes.
Recently, what was the temperature?
66.
66?
66 yes. degrees.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was 70 last week. So look at that, degrees in 1 week.
When you go down there in a couple of weeks to the stream,
I am.
What's ideal temperature you're looking for?
Oh, around 55.
Is that what you
get
like?
Down
yep.
around there, yes. The salmon, they're coming in now. They'll come in now. You know, they'll filter in slowly. You know, they get the urge.
Yeah.
So they gotta just like it's like you. They get the urge once in a while, not often, but once in a while.
I wouldn't touch that
with a 10-foot. Oh,
don't go down that road.
Okay, let's get back to business here. Grand Lake Stream at the dam is running 180 at FBS, and that is low. Wicked low.
That is
I'd like about
low,
250 anyway, but I mean, and we fished it at 700, man. You can consider what that would be.
Oh, yeah.
What it is now?
At 180, you must be able to walk across.
That's hardly moving at all. I mean,
well, at 180, you probably
can
walk across just about any place you want.
Not get your heels wet.
Yeah. Yeah. You could walk across in your Tevas, right?
Pretty much. Yes.
If I could mention this before I go off on my report, last week you mentioned you know, how to release fish, if you recall.
Right.
To grab them by the lower lip. Well, you know, in the fall, they grow teeth, you know, spawning teeth, like salmon and male trout.
Yeah.
And when you grab those, and I have before, too, especially salmon, you know, like Grand Lake Stream salmon in late September and October. And, man, they grow teeth that tears your fingers. So you got to watch it. But you know how to let one go if you don't bother with the teeth too much? Stay away from these toothy critters.
Are you backing off your statement of last week?
No. You can do that.
In favor of lipping a salmon.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. But you could have gloves on, one thing.
Oh, okay. Steel gloves.
Steel gloves, yeah.
Right, okay.
But you know the trick is run your fingers right down the line all the way to the hook. And then just lodge it, give the hook a little shake, and it'll come right out.
Yeah.
And if it's visible.
Okay. All right.
So that'll work great, I'm sure.
Okay.
So that's my report. So
all right.
Thanks so
excellent.
Much.
Excellent. You get an A+ for tonight. Very good.
Appreciate
excellent
it.
Job.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Our guest again, if you just joined us, is Brad Allen. He's the bird group leader for the Maine Department of Fish and Wildlife stationed here in Bangor. And we're going to talk to Brad about all types of different birds in just a second. Right now, though, we have an outdoor trivia question, which is good for a copy of my book, Deer Hunter's Logbook. And Brad has agreed to tell you what the question is and then judge the veracity of your answer. And if you get the right answer, we'll make sure that Diane mails you a copy of my book.
Okay. This question is not really in my wheelhouse, but I can read it. What is a bodkin and how is it used by sportsmen or women?
And what do you call that again?
A bodkin.
A bodkin.
B-O-D-K-I-N.
Okay, 1-800-966-1039. You ponder on that, and we'll be right back. Okay, our studio guest Brad Allen is waiting for you to tell him what is meant by a bodkin. Go ahead, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Hi. The answer is it's a long needle-like thing that we use for... I use it for my head cement to put it around the... Yeah.
Okay, it must be a fly tire?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And we figured it would be a fly tire who would answer that question. I think... What do you think, Brad?
I think you got it.
Think you got it?
I do.
All right. Congratulations. You have won.
Awesome.
And you have... we want you... Unless you have a question for Brad or any of us here, we're going to have you stand by... And Scotty Bates will get your mailing address, and we'll make sure you get...
I just want to thank Bob for the wonderful streamer that he sent me 2-3 weeks ago when I got the Pike family question right.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
What did Bob send you for a streamer?
Oh, I looked at it once, and I put it away in my collection with Bob's book that's autographed. And,
great.
That's and nice. I have another fly that I got from him a while back along in my collection, too. So
yeah.
Very nice. Thank you.
Okay, so you're a fly tire. Are you an upland bird hunter?
Yeah, I love hunting ducks.
Okay.
I guess that's more migratory. But.
Okay. Do you have any questions you want to put to our biologist who's here on ducks, about ducks?
Not really. Other than, this year is the first year I see, like, a very, very small baby partridge. I've never seen one all the time that, you know, I spend on the roads and stuff. And this year I see a little tiny one, which I thought was really different. I haven't seen one nearly as close to that. It's probably just a little bit bigger than a golf ball.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Little one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
well,
I think they've been having a good year. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, you stay on the line, and we'll get your address, and Diane will mail you that book out tomorrow, and Brad may have some comments you'll be interested in later in the show.
Sure.
All right. Stand by. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get down to business. Brad, again,
yes,
you've been the bird leader for Fish and Wildlife Department for 40 years, and by now you must know a little bit about these critters, right?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, you do. I know you do.
Yeah.
And we appreciate the column that you write for the Northwood Sporting Journal as well.
My goal there is to just try to educate people as to what they might not understand about why Fish and Wildlife creates a certain law or a bag limit. So it's a good opportunity for me to try to
And we appreciate you having you on board for the paper.
Thank you.
I thought maybe the normal place to start here would be, just for those who may not know you as we do, you were telling me before the show, you've been with the bird group for most of your career.
Right.
And did you go to UMaine?
I did.
Majored in wildlife?
I did. And then I went to the University of Montana.
Oh, did you?
To graduate school.
Okay.
And knowing I was coming back to Maine the whole time, so I absolutely devoured Montana when I went to school out there.
Isn't that a special place,
It was unbelievable.
Where'd you go to school out there?
In Missoula.
Oh, in Missoula.
Yeah, the University of Montana.
Yeah.
And if it had an ocean, I would have been more inclined to stay. But,
state. We love it.
I love Maine and the Maine coast.
Yeah, I do too, but I like Montana.
Yeah, it's nice.
Okay, so you've been with the department and been involved mostly in birds since year one.
Yep.
Let's start. What I've done here is just kind of made a list of some of the different game birds.
Okay.
I thought we'd start talking about those. Can we start with turkeys?
Absolutely.
Maine introduced turkeys back in, was it the 70s?
77.
77.
Yep.
And am I right that you guys had, in your wildest dreams, you didn't expect the turkeys to take the way they have? Am I right about that?
I think that's a fair statement,
yeah.
Paul. We thought they would be more winter limited. We drew a line across the state of Maine of 80 inches of snow, and it went through about Bangor. Annual snowfall. And we thought that they'd struggle in conditions deeper than 80 inches. And we truly underestimated, I think, the role that people have in feeding them.
Oh, is that one
feeders.
Of the factors for their winter survival?
We think so.
Yeah.
And plus the birds are tougher than we gave them credit for because, you know, they laugh at our winter conditions. We really lose very, very few in the wintertime.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're a tough bird. And
they're tougher than, they can take the winter better than deer, can't they?
Well, they can in places.
Yeah.
And, you know, where turkeys suffer, and I can think of in my career where Vermont had some issues in the mountains of Vermont. When the snow is powdery deep, 2 feet deep, for 2 weeks at a time, they won't even come out of the trees. They're not going to go down and flounder in that. And I think in Maine, when you think about it, our winter conditions, our snow conditions, they never stay deep, fluffy, powdery for very long. We usually get a warm spell or a light rain and some kind of supporting crust, and then the turkeys just have no problem there whatsoever.
Yeah. I recall reading somewhere, maybe you told me, maybe you wrote about it, that a turkey in the toughest of times in January, February, can actually go like 6 weeks without eating? Is that true?
I don't know if it's that. At least 2 weeks.
They can.
Yeah. And they've put them in cold chambers too. And you give them a cup of corn, they can handle 40 degrees below zero.
Is that right?
No problem.
Wow.
With a little bit of fuel put in them.
Yeah.
They're tougher than we thought. They're very, very resourceful, of course. And people kind of wonder why grouse aren't doing well and turkeys are doing well. And turkeys
you know, they can live anywhere. They can live on airports. They can live on golf courses. Yeah. You know, they can live in soccer fields. They can live in deep woods. You know, it's just there's no habitat that they can't exploit somehow. And a lot of the other birds that I work with have very, very finite habitat conditions. And, you know, grouse need young forests. Woodcock need alders for earthworms and all. But a turkey can survive almost anywhere. Yeah.
You got to respect the old birds, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
that's
incredible. Do you have any idea? Does the department have an idea what the population statewide is right now?
Yeah, we're working on that. We've worked with turkey biologists for 30 years who have said, you know, you can put hundreds of thousands of dollars into a program to understand how many birds you have out there, but if you take the harvest in the spring and simply multiply it by 10. You know, that approximates your population pretty well. So last year we killed 6,612 birds times 10 is that many birds on the landscape. And so,
is that a fair number, do you think?
Yeah, we're probably in the 50,000 to 70,000 range. And so what we're doing right now is trying to put a little more science into our population estimates, and we're involved in a big study with the University of Maine right now, and one of the major objectives is to get a better handle on the status of the population
and come up with some kind of a model to forecast populations.
Yeah, we can do that with that information, but we think we'd like to manage turkeys, you know, more discreetly, somewhat like we do with
deer
by management district, and because it varies around the state. And in order for us to have a harvest strategy by management district, we have to know a lot more about the status of the population.
There. We have a caller, Brad, I think, who may have a question for you. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Brad Allen.
Well, good evening, Brad.
Hi.
Quick question, I guess. I'm new to Blue Hill, Maine, and I like stream fishing for trout. Is there any resource here where I can find out where the good places to go are?
I think I would probably start with our regional fisheries office. For the Blue Hill area, you'd be calling our fisheries biologist down in Jonesboro. And, you know, they have intimate knowledge of the status of fishing in the Blue Hill area, having probably stocked a lot of the waters, but certainly understanding what streams would hold native. So I'd get on our website and get our Jonesboro, Maine office and talk to Greg Burr down there. I know Paul knows Greg. And
yeah, he does the show here once in a while.
Yeah, he'd share that information with you, I think.
Oh, very good.
Okay.
I appreciate that info.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call.
And
appreciate
we have another caller.
Yeah. All right, let's take it. Good evening, caller number two. You're on Maine Outdoors with Brad Allen.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm great, thanks.
Good.
You guys are talking about turkeys. And,
turn your radio down, would you?
No. Oh, yeah, I have it down.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm out in my truck.
Okay. You could stand by for a minute. We're taking a commercial break. We'll talk to you right after the break.
Sure.
Okay, we're back with Brad Allen here, who's the bird group leader for the Maine Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we have a caller who we left him standing there. And I hope you still there, caller?
I'm still here.
Oh, thank you for hanging on. We're sorry for that abrupt interruption, but the computer...
Oh, no, my pleasure.
Computer stole us away. Brad is still here. He's waiting to answer any question you may have, caller, so go ahead.
So I just, I remember reading... an article, I don't know, a couple of years ago, that I think it was one of our founding fathers, I'm not really sure, that didn't want the bald eagle to be the federal bird,
right?
But wanted it to be the turkey.
Yeah, it was
Did
Ben.
Did you know
Ben,
anything
ben,
about that?
I do actually. It's Ben Franklin. Was on a committee, I can't believe this, with others, on a committee to get to develop the country's national symbol, and people sent in artwork of eagles, and he hated the motifs that were sent his way. And what he did was he wrote his letter to his daughter, Sarah, and he said, you know, this this contest is going really poorly. He said, I'd rather have a damn wild turkey than a bald eagle if this is all these artists are going to send me. So he wasn't really lobbying for the wild turkey, but he was suggesting that the first drafts of our national symbol weren't very good.
Okay.
So it was just kind of a joke then.
Yeah, it kind of translated into Ben Franklin lobbying for the wild turkey instead of the bald eagle, and it's not really quite true.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. Okay.
Good question.
Thank you.
Though.
Yeah, good question. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Again, if you want to join us tonight and you put a question to Brad Allen, it's 1-800-966-1039. Bob Lehman has a question.
Brad, I think I have had questions in the past, and I'm sure Paul has too, about the competition between deer and turkeys for their, I say browse, or they say browse, or you don't agree with browse so much as what they eat, but berries and buds and stuff like that. How would you answer that question?
In order for two wildlife critters to compete for something that is to the benefit of one and the deleterious to the other, is they have to compete for something that's limited. Now, browse isn't limited, and what people usually use as an example are acorns. And so when there's an acorn crop, if the turkeys get in there and snag all the acorns before the deer get a chance, they claim that that's competition and the turkeys are winning and the deer are suffering. Well, in my impression and from what I can tell from others who've written on this is that there's nothing limited out there in an acorn crop. There's always plenty to go around. If there's a good acorn year, the turkeys could come through and there'll be plenty for the deer afterward. And I have found one case where a hunter who lives right next door to me was damning the wild turkeys for eating all the apples under his favorite tree stand where he deer hunts. And it's live, a wild apple tree that he consistently hunts there in November because the deer like the apples, but the turkeys clean them up in October, and so there are no apples there in November, so his tree stand is not over a wild tree. And so I said, well, you know, you get a good point there. The turkeys have outcompeted, you know, the deer for that spot, and that's
but it doesn't follow that the deer is going to find some other browse. Right.
You know, and they just don't, you know, when you think about a deer and a turkey's diet, they're just too different.
Very different, you know, yeah.
They each might eat a blueberry or an acorn, but those are things that are usually very abundant on the landscape. Yeah.
We have a caller, a couple of callers stacked up. Good evening, caller number one. You're on Maine Outdoors with Brad Allen. Go ahead.
Hey there.
Hi.
Brad, I got a question.
Okay.
This is Fern calling from Norway. I know that there's a department or whatever, the Desert Loon Survey, usually in the second or third week of June. And there's a little mountain pond to the east of Siskoos Lake up to the north end called Lincoln Pond. And this spring, when we were up there, the pond is basically it's a small pond. You can fly in, fly out if you wanted to. But we saw like 12 different loons. It was six or eight pair, or as best as I could count, which I surmised at the time they hadn't nested yet, all right, and there was no way that that lake could support that many of them. Well, sure enough, all but one pair, you know, disappeared, went somewhere else. When I was up there 3 weeks ago, we saw a pair of loons, and they had two chicks.
Sounds good.
Now, I don't know if anybody got up there to do Lincoln Pond, so do I call you or is there somebody else that I should let know about the two chicks up on Lincoln?
Yeah, that loon survey is actually coordinated by Maine Audubon out of Falmouth.
Okay. So
you could Google that, Gilsland Farm in Falmouth, and they coordinate that annual survey. We participate, but we're not in charge of it. So I would encourage you to touch base with them and see if that particular lake gets covered. And if it doesn't, maybe they'll ask you to contribute information next year. But you're exactly right about a small lake like that not supporting all those loons.
Oh, that's right, because I know they're very territorial.
They're very territorial.
We've got a smart one on Siskoos. We got a real smart one on Siskoos. He sees a boat entering his little domain, and he'll come out and he'll follow you along, all right? You hook a fish, and then it's a race.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had personal experiences with that. Yeah,
that doesn't always end well.
And my son was not happy when I swung a paddle at the loan. Okay, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have another caller standing by. Good evening, caller number two. You're on Maine Outdoors with Brad Allen.
Well, hello there, gentlemen. Good to talk with you tonight. This is Tony from up in Bangor.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hi. I got a question for you. I've been away in Florida for 5 years, just coming back, and we used to see an occasional pheasant around, especially out in Levant, Corinth area. What's the status of the pheasant population in the state of Maine these days?
Well, in your part of the state, it's slim and none. And in southern Maine, there's still a fairly active pheasant propagation program going, where the pheasant hunters of York and Cumberland County are actually required to buy a stamp. And every year that generates about $15,000 for the department. And we take that $15,000 and buy as many pheasants, as baby pheasants, as we possibly can. And we work with people to raise them and then release them. So there is a bit of a pheasant program still going on in southern Maine, but it's basically non-existent beyond Cumberland County.
Okay, caller.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the question. All right. Okay, before we switch gears here and talk about one of my favorite upland birds, the grouse, rough grouse or the partridge, Bob Lehman wants to make a dollar here for the radio station. He's going to tell you about our sponsor, General Appliance in Brewer.
All righty. Thank you, Paul. General Appliance used to be the Perkins Appliance in Brewer, as Paul knows well. And they sponsor our Maine Outdoors program and have for a number of years. And they're located at 91 Center Street in Brewer. And they have a full range of appliances, including gas and electric. And they would welcome being known as your all-around appliance dealer, offering the servicing of anything you purchase there, which is no small deal today. And, of course, one relatively new item carried by them is, of course, composting toilets.
Right away, baby.
Thank you, Norm, and I'm sure our what's-his-name's listening tonight.
Do they give him extra pay for doing that? Do you get a talent fee?
I was hoping. I mean, I'm trying. I don't know.
I asked Jimmy outside tonight before he left, and I said, do you still say that at home when you're listening? He says, absolutely. So thank you, Jim, for that. Another thing I want to mention about General Appliance in Brewer. You asked me a question last week about, do they plug in those compost toilets? Yeah. That's what you asked me.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, absolutely not. And you said, well, how do they run then?
Yeah.
Well, I think I mentioned that a while back on a little, said that they run on peat moss and wood fiber. And that's included in the sale. You empty that once or twice in a season, and there's no power, no propane, no batteries, and no plug-in. But they have to be vented. They have to be vented, of course.
Yeah, I'm amazed by that.
They're on about $1,700 for one of those things, and it's worth every nickel.
Yeah.
And the number to call, Paul, as you know, if you want to get one of those, or any gas appliance or electric appliance, is
989-3914? No, that's not right.
4341? It's the one I have here, right here.
Okay, whatever that's it says on the paper is right.
That's right.
Okay.
4341.
Yeah.
So, we hope you run in. If you need an appliance, gas or electric, we hope you go over and patronize General Appliance in Brewer. Easy to get to right there on Center Street.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay. Again, our guest is Brad Allen. He's the bird research leader for the Maine Department of Fish and Wildlife. Let's switch gears, as I said. Let's talk a little bit about grouse.
Okay.
It was kind of interesting. We had Al Carpathwaite on from North Maine Woods a couple of weeks ago, Brad, and he kind of surprised me. He said the grouse hunters who come through the gates at North Maine Woods in the fall are outnumber all of the other hunters combined.
That's amazing.
And so we know then that next to deer hunting, I guess grouse hunting is big to the Maine economy.
Absolutely.
A lot of grouse hunters in Maine. And you're a grouse hunter, right?
I am.
I'm a grouse hunter. Norm's a grouse hunter.
And I've been known to go through Al's gates to go grouse hunting in the fall.
There you go. What's the grouse outlook right now?
The grouse, I would say it's fall. Going to be slightly better than average. We had a cold, wet spring, but backing up a little bit, Kelsey Sullivan, my game bird biologist, does some grouse surveys in the spring with drumming counts, and those numbers were up. And So we did have a cold, cool, and wet spring, which usually does not bode well for production, but it wasn't a washout, and it wasn't freezing cold. So I think I'm optimistic. Any day in Maine is a good day to go grouse hunting, of course, and I'm optimistic, and my trolls in the North Maine woods were telling me early that they were seeing quite a few grouse, and when I asked a couple of our biologists that recently, they were not quite so enamored with the status of the population that they've been seeing lately. But you know, there's just so many millions of acres of good grouse habitat up there behind those gates.
Oh yeah,
it's always good.
Yeah, yeah. So you certainly expect it to be as good as it was last fall?
I think so. Yeah. I think it'll be, there'll be pockets of the state. You know, the whole state didn't get all that crazy weather that we did down here. A good thing, one indicator we have of the woodcock population is that was 13% better than last year. So the index to the woodcock population was improved. And
so I expect woodcock
I think
be a little
those
more
numbers
plentiful.
Will be better
that's
than
good.
Last.
Yeah.
And,
that's good news.
You know, I think, you know, the turkeys everywhere, good grouse and woodcock hunting. But, you know, not a banner year, but not a bust by any stretch.
Yeah, okay. Talking about grouse, a number of years ago, you were a guest on the show along with Professor Eric Blomberg.
Exactly.
From the University of Maine. And, and he announced at that time that in collaboration with IFNW, there was going to be a study. I think one of the first in Maine, wasn't it? A detailed study of the grouse.
Yeah, for most of my career, you know, grouse do very well in Maine without us meddling, essentially.
Yeah.
Grouse like young forests. Mainers like to produce young forests. They're not afraid to cut down trees by any stretch. So we have good grouse habitat and good numbers. And the thing that happened with the University of Maine is, you know, I'm working 8 miles down the road in Bangor, and federal money for wildlife research has been good for the last decade. The Pittman-Robinson program has had quite a bit of money that my agency has taken advantage of, which is supporting our deer study, our moose study, our wild turkey study, and this grouse study. But I also needed somebody at the University of Maine that was a game bird person, because most of the people up there, most of the professors, some of the ones that I had when I went to college there, you know, they've moved on. And until you find a game bird specialist like Dr. Blomberg, you know, there's nobody up there to collaborate with.
Oh, okay.
So it was a perfect storm for me because we had the interest. The federal money was up, and Eric took a job at Orono. And, you know, we instantly got on a big grouse study.
Okay. And so it's been, what, 3 or 4 years now?
Yeah, we did that for 3 years, and it's done. The two young ladies that were the graduate students have published their results and moved on.
Can you talk about some of the findings?
One of the biggest questions that I had back in those days was the effect of late season hunting. I have a lot of Maine sportsmen and several game wardens were concerned that December hunting a grouse is too late. You know, those are the birds you don't want to kill because you need them next spring.
Right.
And a lot of states have late seasons. And so I wanted to, with radioed birds, I wanted to look at the impact of late season grouse hunting and mortality might have on the population. And I'm very happy to say that we lost very few birds in December. The harvest was inconsequential.
That
really,
right.
After Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And so it's nothing to worry about then.
Well,
right?
Not from a hunting standpoint.
No.
We had a couple of bad winters. We had a lot of predation. We lost a lot of birds. And, you know, so that was normal. But we get a better understanding of that. But what I can affect is hunting seasons. And made me realize that our present hunting season is perfectly aligned with the status of the population. So
today, this fall,
when
you start grouse hunting, what is the daily possession of grouse now? Is it two?
Well, the daily limit is four.
Four is the daily limit.
Possession.
All right. And it's been that way for quite a long time, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. It has. And
and that's not a problem as far as the...
It doesn't appear to be, because only in northern Maine do people, you know, actually shoot for a day. And, you know, those numbers up there seem very supported by an abundant population. So bag limit doesn't seem to be an issue.
Yeah. Brad, did you let Truth Scouts around? I know we have some around. How big a population do we have in Maine?
They're still uncommon, Bob. It's not like we're going to lose them off our landscape by any stretch, but we can only call them uncommon. There are certain areas around Telos, as an example, around Baxter, that the numbers are quite high.
Down east, there's some. Township 30's got quite a few of them around there.
Yeah. And not enough to support a legal harvest, but certainly not enough to worry about them blinking off the face of the earth.
And they call them the dumb birds or something.
They are.
I mean,
they'll
fly up into a tree and
they're a little slow.
Walk right up to them.
Now, Bob, have you ever eaten a spruce grouse?
I have not. Have you?
I can't answer that.
You don't know. Maybe you did. You don't know.
I think years ago we did by mistake.
Yeah.
And they're pretty awful.
Oh, are they really? Did you eat one, Brad? You tried that?
I have not, but I have seen the breast meat is bright red like your solo cup there.
Yeah, they taste like a spruce tree.
Absolutely.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They eat a lot of fur.
I hope I didn't
needles.
Get myself in any trouble. I had nothing to do
with
it.
No, the statute of limitations.
I did not dispose of that.
They're not legal to shoot, are they?
No,
they're not.
Very illegal, yeah. Okay, well, that's interesting. So we can look for a decent grouse outlook. Any other findings in the Blomberg study?
Well, most of the other work we were looking at was just, how well do they survive? And, survival and nest success are metrics that are of interest to me and not so much to the listener or the reader. But it was a lot of our findings were right in line with the grouse literature, and there's been a lot of it. Grouse is very well studied.
So it helps give you confidence
it
in
does.
Making your decisions.
It does, and... it's a very important bird to the state.
Oh, yeah.
And fortunately, it's all about habitat, and we have a lot of good grouse habitat. Now, Pennsylvania's in a free fall with their grouse population right now because what they believe is West Nile virus is killing all their birds.
I've heard rumors about that. Is that a serious issue in Pennsylvania?
It sure appears to be, and a couple other states in the Midwest are experiencing some population drops that they're attributing to West Nile virus. So that's of concern. We sampled for it last year.
And no problem here in Maine?
Well, we found that I think maybe 10% of the birds that survived West Nile virus and carried antibodies for the virus had been exposed to it. So we know it's an issue here, but it doesn't seem to be a big mortality factor.
But something you'll be watching, right?
Yeah, we keep an eye on it, and we do. I monitor West Nile virus activities this time of year.
Did that Blomberg study tell you what the key predator is of a grouse? Is there one
maybe.
Single predator?
Well, I think
coyotes?
No, probably not. I think it came down to about 60% of the mortality was caused by hawks.
Hawks?
Yeah, and 40% were more mammal-like. And usually when a hawk or something kills a grouse and we follow its radio, we'll find the radio dangling off the branch that the hawk was sitting on, consuming it.
Yeah.
Mink, of course, or something, we'll take a grouse and we'll take it underground into a rock wall and we'll find the radio under there. So everything likes to eat a grouse. There's just no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
And about half of the mortality is by mammal and the other half avian predators. Yeah.
So predators take more grouse than hunters, I would assume, huh?
Oh, yeah.
By far, probably.
By far. Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah. It's a good thing they're as invasive as they are.
Yeah.
And as we all know, those of us who hunted, sometimes they're very difficult to hit.
Yeah.
No, not for you, Paul.
Yes, for me. Yeah. Okay, well, that's good news. And so no more, the Blomberg study has concluded.
Right.
And so there'll be no more callers on grouse in Maine?
Not to my knowledge, unless, West Nile or some other unforeseen limiting factor sweeps across our landscape that we need more information on. But we've shifted gears into wild turkey research.
And grouse have never been successfully recreated in captivity, right?
The old books on the rough grouse have showed the results of artificial propagation in the 40s and 50s, and they just said, no, they're not a good bird in captivity.
They don't drive at all.
No. They stress out, you know. There's a thing called capture myopathy, and they just don't handle captivity well.
Don't do, like deer. They don't do stress. Before we run out of time here, I want to give you a chance to talk about the breeding bird study that you're doing. Could you fill us in on that?
Yeah, we're that's one of the reasons I haven't retired, Paul, is we're doing too many good things.
That's good.
And I got a great staff doing some great things.
Oh, you're happy in your work. That's good.
I am. And one of the projects that we're working on, we're calling Maine's largest citizen science project. It's the Maine Bird Atlas. And the Maine Bird Atlas is a project to survey and map the distribution and abundance of breeding and wintering birds in Maine. And you want to talk about a big task, you know, find out where all the chickadees are nesting in the state of Maine or everything. You know, there's 250 breeding birds in Maine and several more that winter here. So this is a five-year project where we're trying to get anybody with interest in birds, and we all know that a lot of people are, to participate in this. And let us know if they've got a chickadee in a hollow birch tree in their backyard or a robin in the apple tree. And they can enter this information and learn more about this program through our website, www.maine.gov/birdatlas.
So are you saying that somebody like Diane, my wife, who loves to watch the birds, a bird feeder, there's information that she could add to this website that
Absolutely.
Would be of some value?
Absolutely. And
what kind of information, Brad?
Well, there's a turkey with 9 poults in our backyard right now. That's a confirmed sighting and a breeding of wild turkeys in your hometown.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, what the department really wants to do is to reach out to non-traditional constituents, you know, hunters, fishermen, those are our friends. But but people love birds, and we want them to help us manage and conserve birds in a bigger scale. And we need them to participate because it's such a Herculean effort. And
so if somebody's an amateur bird watcher and they want to contribute to this study, there's a website, and what is it? Maine Bird Atlas?
Maine.gov/birdatlas, or you can go to our department website, and there'll be there'll be indicators of the Maine Bird Atlas, and you can learn more about it there. And
so,
you know,
the one I have here is mainebirdatlas@gmail.com. Is that was what I saw in the brochure? Yeah. Maine, all one word, mainebirdatlas@gmail.com.
That
work?
That's a contact with one of our coordinators. That would get to Glenn, and Glenn could handle any questions from that point on.
All right.
You know, this is such a large task. We're taking it over 5 years. We're in year two, and we've hired a small group of ornithologists to help us coordinate this effort and collect the data. So, you know, just it'll be around for 2 or 3 more years. Don't feel like you're behind the eight ball if you haven't. But with 1 year of bird atlasing, we picked up 9 different species that weren't here 30 years ago.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Great.
So hummingbirds is the one that I get excited about. I love those little hummingbirds. They're great. Brad, I want to thank you very much. Bob and I want to thank you for being here. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us. It's been very informative, and we hope
you
come back.
It's fun. People love birds.
And good luck in the upland covers there this fall. Our guest next week is going to be Game Warden David Chabot.
Chabot,
who will be with us to talk about the Landowner Relations Program, and we'll see you all next week on Maine Outdoors.